Fraser, can you hear me? Fraser?
You recorded now.
It says it's recording on Zoom. Fraser's currently under a bed sheet. He's on his fifth microphone.
Oh no, it's my second microphone, but I ate my first one. Can we tell the listeners?
Like, as you can all tell, we don't know what we're doing.
When this becomes edited, I apologise for any blips or sound levels that aren't right. I'm coming very late to this in life.
But I think gay people are conditioned to apologise.
Okay, can I rephrase that? This is brilliant, and we are two gay men going out into the world and we're doing our thing, and we are unapologetic about that.
But if you are listening and you think that these two gay men need help, then please, please don't hesitate to get in touch.
Cool. Let's get on with it then.
Roll the film. Go.
Great. I'll fashion that into something beautiful.
On November the 27th, 1970, 150 people gathered on Highbury Fields, London, for the first LGBTQ march in UK history.
And November the 27th, 2020, is the 50th anniversary of that march.
The LGBTQ plus community in the UK owes so much to these brave individuals, so we wanted to find out who they were, who they are, and that's what we're trying to do.
We are Fraser Flintham and JD Stewart.
And this is the 150 Marchers.
Okay, before we start, let's give you some context to the journey we've been on.
I'm JD Stewart.
I'm Fraser Flintham.
And we're both playwrights.
And we met in January at an LGBTQ plus writing workshop where, well, I'm not quite sure how we did it, but we discovered that we share an interest in queer history.
Yeah, I think it was because I said something and you looked interested in listening to it. So I took that as I'm just going to keep talking.
Correct answer. That's exactly what happened.
So before our conversation, I became interested in LGBTQ history while studying at NYU in New York for a couple of years. And I just became really interested, I guess, living so close to Stonewall and walking past there frequently when I was at NYU. Last year was the 50th anniversary, or World Pride, as it was noted as. And ever since I came back to the UK, I wanted to research queer history here. And that was when I discovered that the first LGBTQ plus march took place at Highbury Fields in 1970. With the first gay pride happening in London in 1972, and then the first gay pride happening in Scotland, Edinburgh, in 1995. So that is really not that long ago.
I, on the other hand, am a Section 28 baby. So I grew up under the shadow of Thatcher's Local Government Act that prohibited any promotion of homosexuality within schools. The mere mention of gay men and women was forbidden. So learning about our history was, well, that was not top of the agenda. So I'm really keen to expand my own knowledge of UK queer history, something that I was denied as a young person.
Yeah, and in like the beginning throes of lockdown, while I was researching all these different things, I messaged Fraser and asked if he knew about this, and he said no.
And that's how the seeds of this podcast became planted.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I'm okay. How are you?
I just broke a nail. So I'm a little bit sad.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Well, not like an acrylic one.
No. Well, since the start of lockdown, I've been, like, not really biting my fingernails anymore. It's pretty cool. But I've just broken one. Did you manage to have a think about maybe doing something for this thing in November?
Yeah, hang on. Let me just see. I'm going to see to the dog. Hang on. Yes.
Like we said, we didn't know much about the march until a few months ago. When we began to ask other people, they admitted they didn't know either. Why don't we know who they are? What they did? What was going on for them? What it was like taking such a brave step back then?
So under normal circumstances, we'd want to write a play as a way to commemorate the anniversary of the first march.
But that was in May, during the nationwide lockdown, when all the theatres were closed.
And now it's the beginning of October 2020, and sadly, most of them still are. So, without the option of putting on a play...
I was thinking about doing something audio.
Do you mean like a podcast or something?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't... Yeah, I say that loosely, because I've never made one, but I don't know how we'd... I don't know how we'd do it.
We could try and find the 150 people who went.
Well, yeah.
And that's what we've set out to do.
compile a list of the names of the people who were at the march in November 1970 on Highbury Fields, because as far as we know, nobody else has done that.
Just so we're clear from the start, we aren't intending to out anyone. People who don't want to be named will, of course, not be. The podcast is a celebration of that march.
We also decided that if we're going to look to people in the past, maybe we should talk to people who are doing similar things now, linking up that past and present. So hopefully, like the original marches, we can all focus on a better future. So that's also what we've done.
In the 150 Marchers podcast, we're going to share with you our ongoing search to collate the list of the 150 people who marched on Highbury Fields that night.
And share interviews and chats we've had with some amazing campaigners who have done and are doing brilliant things in the UK for the queer community.
We have some incredible interviews coming up throughout the series, including trans activist Charlie Craggs, Phil Samba from Prepster, Tash Walker from Switchboard, artist and campaigner Shardine Taylor-Stone, Peter Tatchell, Matthew Todd, to name but a few. They will be talking with us about the catalyst to their own activism, allyship, and their hopes for the future.
We're also going to need your help trying to find out who was there, which we'll talk more about later. The main thing is, we hope you'll stay listening.
So that's it.
Episode 1.
Here we go.
Homosexual behaviour between adult consenting males in private should no longer be a criminal offence.
This march was the catalyst for all the rights we've got now.
Why don't we know who they are?
In the vote on gay marriage. Gay marriage.
The eyes have it. The eyes have it.
Children need to be taught.
Charlie Craggs with us today.
Children need to be taught.
Our interview with Peter Tatchell.
Children need to be taught that they have an inalienable right to be gay.
Blackout UK.
Liam Hackett.
Phil Samba from Prepster. The brave step back then.
And we want to make sure that people know their names. Know their names. Know their names.
Okay, everyone, to kick this off, we're again going to go back to us in May. Okay, so this is on London's LGBT plus community pride on Wikipedia. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, the first London gay marches were in November 1970 with 150 men walking through Highbury Fields in North London. Well, I'm sure there was women there as well, but...
Okay, there's this. Have you got the one on the in the Islington Gazette? I just sent it to you. It says, okay. It's a torch. Oh, this is a torchlight rally.
So it was a torchlight rally, not a march?
Well, is it the same thing?
Wait. Was organized by the Gay Liberation Front in response to the arrest of Louis Eakes in the Fields. So, I know what you're all thinking. Who are the GLF and who was Louis Eakes?
So we're quickly going to share with you what we've learned about the GLF.
On October 14th, 1970, at the London School of Economics, Bob Mellors and Aubrey Walter, two British gay men, founded the Gay Liberation Front. It was during the heat of the 1970 summer and 1 year after the Stonewall riot that Bob met Aubrey at the Revolutionary People's Constitutional Conference in Philadelphia in September. They had gone to the USA that summer after hearing whispers and reading press regarding a new gay movement.
So the GLF had a really broad political platform. They denounced racism and declared support for various developing world struggles and the Black Panther Party. They took an anti-capitalist stance and attacked the nuclear family and traditional gender roles. One of the GLF's first acts was to organise a march to continue the momentum of the Stonewall Uprising and to demand an end to the persecution of homosexuals.
Bob became involved with the New York faction of the GLF, and Aubrey went to a number of cities, including San Francisco. The conference they met at had been called by the Black Panthers. The Black Panther Party was founded in 1966 in Oakland, California, by Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton.
In 1969, the Stonewall riots happened in New York City, and as the gay rights movement began to obtain momentum, along with the women's liberation movement, Newton delivered a speech on August the 15th, 1970, outlining the Black Panther Party position on both of them.
For many, Newton's remarks were unusual, as other Black organizations had remained silent on both of these rising movements.
Here's the speech made by Huey Newton. And we decided to include it in full because it's just too good to cut. It's read for us by Tia James.
During the past few years, strong movements have developed among women and among homosexuals seeking their liberation. There has been some uncertainty about how to relate to these movements. Whatever your personal opinions and your insecurities about homosexuality and the various liberation movements among homosexuals and women, and I speak of the homosexuals and women as oppressed groups, we should try to unite with them in a revolutionary fashion. I say, whatever your insecurities are, because as we very well know, sometimes our first instinct is to want to hit a homosexual in the mouth and want a woman to be quiet. We want to hit a homosexual in the mouth because we are afraid that we might be homosexual. And we want to hit the woman or shut her up because we are afraid that she might castrate us or take the nuts that we might not have to start with. We must gain security in ourselves and therefore have respect and feelings for all oppressed people. We must not use the racist attitude that the white races use against our people because they are black and poor. Many times the poorest white person is the most racist because he is afraid that he might lose something or discover something that he does not have. So you're some kind of a threat to him. This kind of psychology is in operation when we view oppressed people and we are angry with them because of their particular kind of behavior or that particular kind of deviation from the established norm. Remember, we have not established a revolutionary value system. We are only in the process of establishing it. I do not remember our ever constituting any value that said that a revolutionary must say offensive things towards homosexuals, or that a revolutionary should make sure that women do not speak out about their own particular kind of oppression. As a matter of fact, it is just the opposite. We say that we recognize the women's right to be free. We have not said much about the homosexual at all, because we must relate to the homosexual movement because it is a real thing. And I know through reading and through my life experience and observations that homosexuals are not given freedom and liberty by anyone in the society. They might be the most oppressed people in the society. And what made them homosexual? Perhaps it's a phenomenon that I don't understand entirely. Some people say that it is the decadence of capitalism. I don't know if that is the case. I rather doubt it. But whatever the case is, we know that homosexuality is a fact that exists, and we must understand it in its purest form. That is, a person should have the freedom to use his body in whatever way he wants. That is not endorsing things in homosexuality that we wouldn't view as revolutionary. But there is nothing to say that a homosexual cannot also be a revolutionary. And maybe I'm now injecting some of my prejudice by saying that even a homosexual can be a revolutionary. Quite the contrary. Maybe a homosexual could be the most revolutionary. When we have revolutionary conferences, rallies, and demonstrations, there should be full participation of the gay liberation movement and the women's liberation movement. Some groups might be more revolutionary than others. We should not use the actions of a few to say that they are all reactionary or counter-revolutionary, because they are not. We should deal with the factions just as we deal with any other group or party that claims to be revolutionary. We should try to judge somehow whether they are operating in a sincere revolutionary fashion and from a really oppressed situation. And we will grant that if they are women, they are probably oppressed. If they do things that an unrevolutionary or counter-revolutionary, then criticize that action. If we feel that the group in spirit means to be revolutionary in practice, but they make mistakes in interpretation of the revolutionary philosophy, or they do not understand the dialectics of the social forces in operation, we should criticize that and not criticize them because they are women trying to be free? And the same is true for homosexuals. We should never say a whole movement is dishonest when in fact they are trying to be honest. They are just making honest mistakes. Friends are allowed to make mistakes. The enemy is not allowed to make mistakes because his whole existence is a mistake and we suffer from it. But the Women's Liberation Front and Gay Liberation Front are our friends. They are our potential allies, and we need as many allies as possible. We should be willing to discuss the insecurities that many people have about homosexuality. When I say insecurities, I mean the fear that they are some kind of threat to our manhood. I can understand this fear because of the long conditioning process that builds insecurity in the American male. Homosexuality might produce certain hang-ups in us. I have hang-ups myself about male homosexuality, but on the other hand, I have no hang-up about female homosexuality, and that is a phenomenon in itself. I think it is probably because male homosexuality is a threat to me, and female homosexuality is not. We should be careful about using those terms that might turn our friends off. The terms faggot and punk should be deleted from our vocabulary. And especially, we should not attach names normally designed for homosexuals to men who are enemies of the people, such as Nixon or Mitchell. Homosexuals are not enemies of the people. We should try to form a working coalition with the gay liberation and women's liberation groups. We must always handle social forces in the most appropriate manner.
It was that speech that inspired Bob and Aubrey to bring back what they learned to the UK.
So back to us in May, getting our head around it all.
These two guys meet in America, get inspired by the Black Panthers and everything else that was going on there after Stonewall, and decide to come home and do a similar thing in the UK.
Yeah. And then they do this march because this guy gets arrested.
Yeah.
Well, it must have been there then. This Bob and Aubrey.
Looks like that.
Let's put them down then. It's our first names.
Our first two names.
Although we still hadn't, and still haven't, confirmed for sure if they were at the march or not.
So this guy gets arrested and the GLF decide to march in protest.
Hang on, but I thought it was legal being gay.
Yeah, but
it was legalised in 67, I think.
I don't know.
Now, if, like us back in May, you don't know much about the law in 1970...
or your knowledge is a little shady, let us fill you in on that. So, it's 1970. The Prime Minister is Edward Heath, leader of the Conservative Party, and he'd been put into power on the 19th of June that year. Number one in the charts was I Hear You Knockin' by Dave Edmonds. We play you some, but we can't afford the rights.
That's why we're using this jaunty 70s-inspired track as backing.
And Fraser told me I can't sing the song for you. We also have zero budget for this podcast, like zero.
So what was it like for gay people in the UK in 1970?
Well, in 1967, 3 years before the march at Highbury Fields, following years of lobbying by the Homosexual Law Reform Society, an organisation that campaigned in the United Kingdom for changes in the laws that criminalised homosexual relations between men, we'll talk more about them later, saw the ushering in of the Sexual Offences Act.
This bill legalised homosexual acts on the condition that they were consensual, in private, and between two men who had attained the age of 21.
The Act applied only to England and Wales. It took until 1980 in Scotland and 1982 in Northern Ireland for a similar bill to be passed.
It's probably useful to point out that this was the first gay law reform since 1553, when anal sex was made a crime during Henry VIII's reign. Now, all other sexual acts between men were made illegal during the Victorian era in 1885. So that's 85 years that it was a criminal offence to be gay. So in 1967, this was a big year for gay rights.
So by 1970, things were looking up for the queer community, right?
No.
The problem with this act brought in 1967 was that it was only a part decriminalization. It did repeal the maximum sentence of life imprisonment for anal sex. However, the age of consent for sex between men was 21 years old. This was in comparison to 16 for male-female couples. This fed into the homophobic notion that an older man would corrupt and seduce a younger man. If a guy over 21 years old had non-anal sex with a guy aged 16 to 21, the prison sentence was increased from 2 years to 5 years.
So this bill wasn't about condoning homosexuality. It merely argued that it was not within the responsibility of the criminal law to penalise homosexual men, who were already the object of so much ridicule and derision. Now, the comments of Roy Jenkins, Home Secretary at the time, sum up the government's attitude perfectly.
Those who suffer from this disability carry a great weight of shame all their lives.
With regards to the law, you could still be prosecuted for having gay sex unless it took place in strict privacy.
You had to be in your own home, doors locked, windows locked.
Curtains drawn, nobody else present in the house.
If two or more men had sex or were filmed or photographed by another person, it would also be a crime.
The Act also didn't include armed forces or merchant navy. It was still a criminal offence. Even after the law was fully changed for regular citizens, those in the armed forces and navy could still be jailed up until 1994. After 1967, laws which were centuries old remained active and were referred to as unnatural offences. The two main crimes were anal sex, known as buggery, and gross indecency, which was defined as any sexual contact between men, including touching and kissing.
And on top of all that, you could also be charged with attempting to have or even organising gay sex. For example, even if you chatted to a guy, met in a public place with gay ideas, loitered in public places with homosexual intent, even smiled or winked at another man, you could be charged.
In 1967, liberalisation was definitely there, but it meant that the laws which were still holding on became even more policed and in some cases, extremely aggressively.
And the police would hold stakeouts in parks and toilets.
They'd use pretty policemen to lure gay men into committing sexual offences.
Gay saunas were frequently raided, and things called disorderly house charges were laid out on gay clubs that let same-sex couples dance cheek to cheek. So many members of the LGBT plus community were arrested until the 1990s under public order and breach of the peace laws.
So to the average person, I guess the Sexual Offences Act didn't mean very much. But to gay people, instead of giving them the freedom and liberty they longed for, it actually made their lives even harder. Liberation, it most certainly was not.
In the following decades, around 15,000 men were convicted because of these laws. And between 1885 and 2013, nearly 100,000 were arrested for same-sex acts. What about women?
Great question, Fraser. Well, lesbianism was never really targeted by any kind of law, which I'm sure isn't surprising for many people listening. However, it was discussed in Parliament in 1921, and the goal was to introduce discriminatory legislation, but...
Well, there's always a but.
Yes, always. The bill, called the Criminal Law Amendment, was rejected by the House of Commons and the House of Lords as they thought it would encourage women to explore homosexuality. They also thought that an extremely small amount of women were lesbians, so nothing was put into place. This was obviously not true, but as we saw then, and even as we see now, the men in power aren't really sure of anything.
After World War II, there started to be some trans visibility.
Awesome. Tell us more, Fraser. Tell us more.
A guy called Michael Dillon published a book called Self, A Study of Endocrinology in 1964. Now, nowadays, we call it an autobiography, and it was about the first transgender man to undergo phalloplasty surgery. It followed his journey from Laura to Michael and the surgeries he went under performed by Sir Harold Gillies. Then, in 1951, Roberta Cowell...
I've heard of her!
Yep, she was a World War II Spitfire pilot, and she was the first woman to have vaginoplasty surgery in the UK. And this is really cool. She went on to become a racing driver.
That's awesome. So quick recap, in 1970, there is no real gay rights movement. Apart from the lobbying group, the Homosexual Law Reform Society, it's still very dangerous for gay men.
And it feels like things have gone backwards, not forwards. So in the UK in 1970,
it's tough. Okay, so now you're up to date with the GLF and what it was like for the UK's queer people in the 1970s. Let's get back to us doing our Google searching. Back in May. So this Aubrey Walter and Bob Mellors come back from America and set up a GLF over here.
Yeah, it says here, the first meeting took place on the 14th of October, 1970.
And then this guy, Louis Eakes, gets arrested and they decide to march over that.
Yep. Mr. Eakes of the Young Liberals was detained for cruising several men in a police entrapment operation. Mr. Eakes claimed he was asking them for a light.
Oh, he busted by the pretty policeman.
Maybe an ugly one, I don't know.
I don't think they'd hire an ugly policeman to be a pretty policeman.
Yeah, oh, hang on, it says, have you got this bit? Peter Tatchell, one of Britain's foremost LGBT campaigners, tells the Gazette, homosexuality had been partly decriminalised in 67, but most aspects of gay life remained criminalised. This rally in Highbury Fields was a watershed moment, the first time LGBT people had protested for their rights in Britain. People were very nervous, fearing arrest. When that didn't happen at the march, it emboldened gay people. They were able to feel more confident about public campaigning against the discrimination that remained.
So nobody was arrested. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's what it says. In November 2000, a plaque was unveiled in the fields to honour the march. There's a plaque there.
Oh, nice. And Peter Tatchell, you said, right? I feel like I know his name.
Yeah, he's a massive player in the gay rights movement. You'll have seen him on telly, I'm sure.
Okay. Maybe he could confirm for us if Bob and Aubrey were at the march and maybe give us some more names. Is that cheating?
Or we might just tell us that someone's already done all this and we should just go to the British Library and find the list.
Do you think he will?
Maybe.
And so in May, that's what we did. We emailed Peter Tatchell. There's an info email here, but it does say he receives thousands of emails and he may not be able to respond immediately, especially if he's in the middle of a major campaign. Well, I mean, it's lockdown, so maybe there's not a major campaign.
We need to sound really smart.
Yeah, because we're not.
And we got this reply.
Hi, Fraser and JD. Great idea to memorialise GLF and the first public protest for LGBT plus rights in the UK. A public event on 27th November is already in the planning by my foundation on the site of that first protest in Highbury Fields. I think it will be hard to name 50 of those present on 27 November, let alone 150. Many are dead and were in any case unknown at the time. I was not there that night. Good luck and best wishes, Peter.
It was a moment of mixed emotions.
Oh, shit. We just named our podcast the 150 Marches.
You know, I mean, I'm a very negative person, so maybe we should just give it up. And maybe, like, we could win the award for the shortest podcast ever.
Yep, let's do it. Bye.
But he also said this.
Best for you to talk to these people from the GLF who were probably there or could put you in touch with others who were. Andrew Lumsden and Stuart Feather. Mention that I put you in touch.
So, Andrew Lumsden and Stuart Feather are first names.
And he'd given us their email contact, so these were people we could contact directly.
We emailed them and waited.
And it seemed as easy as that.
So if you've made it this far, thank you for listening to the first episode of the 150 Marchers, and we hope that you will stick with us.
We'd also like to thank Tia James and Charles Brunton for representing the voices of Huey P. Newton and MP Roy Jenkins.
And also, you've got no budget, no resources, so if you do listen, want to get in touch and help us in any way.
Know anyone who attended the march or know of a friend, or if you have a father or a grandfather who sits at home and talks about one time how he was a pretty policeman, anything that we've talked about that raises any kind of exciting flags for you, please get in touch with us. We'd be more than happy to chat and see if we can include you moving forward.
And we've learned a hell of a lot from making episode one, so episode two is going to be incredible. The production values are going to be out of this world. Levels are going to be sorted. We can't wait for that.
And furthermore, we are retraining, as we have been advised by the government.
We're training as DJs, so if anyone local radio stations wants to employ us, and we've got our own mics, got our own P45 that we've just been given from the arts industry, so we're ready to go.
The 150 Marchers was written by Fraser Flintham and JD Stewart and edited by Fraser Flintham. You can find us on Twitter at 150 Marchers. Our DMs are open, so please slide on in.